I'm Mark Irons, tonight on EWTN News Nightly. 1 week later, as President Trump visits Texas, we hear from the pastor of two Catholic girls killed in the deadly flooding. It's the last town on the West Bank inhabited entirely by Christians, and it's living in, quote, daily fear and siege. Tonight, the local priest speaks to EWTN. Changing the rules, the IRS makes some major changes regarding the endorsement of political candidates by religious leaders. We have a full explanation. And Catholic beauty in the heart of our nation's capital. We take a look at some breathtaking artwork of St. Benedict on his feast day. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Benedict. Our top story tonight. Today marks 1 week since torrential rains caused deadly flooding in Texas. More than 170 people are still missing, on top of the 121 people confirmed dead. And the destruction left behind is still being cleaned up. President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump traveled to Texas today to see the damage firsthand and meet with survivors and those grieving. The president says families have been devastated, some losing multiple children. And he said after touring the area that he's never seen anything like it, adding that the search for the missing continues. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Mark, President Trump said today that he visited with incredible families, some who lost a child and some even two children. He says a narrow river turned into a monster, and he also brought with him words of comfort.
President Donald Trump addressed the disaster the moment he stepped out of the White House this morning.
It's a horrible thing, a horrible thing. Nobody can even believe it, such a thing. That much water that fast, without a dam break, you'd think a dam would have to break to have it. So it's a terrible thing, but we're going to be there with some of the great families and others, the governor, everybody.
After leaving D.C., the president arrived in Kerrville, right in the heart of Texas Hill Country, where last week's flash flood claimed over 100 lives and left widespread damage.
I've seen a lot of bad ones. I've gone to a lot of hurricanes, a lot of tornadoes. I've never seen anything like this. This is a bad one.
The president took an aerial tour of the flood zone and visited with first responders and victims' relatives.
But the First Lady and I are here in Texas to express the love and support and the anguish of our entire nation in the aftermath of this really horrific and deadly flood. Nobody has any idea how and why a thing like this could happen.
Even though the administration considers cutting FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, they say it has enough money to keep helping Texas.
FEMA has $13 billion in its reserves right now to continue to pay for the necessary expenses. The president has said to Texas it needs anything it needs, it will get.
Now, in Texas, the president also thanked first responders, who he says raced into grave danger to save lives. And he also said we can take comfort knowing that the girls who died are now in the comfort of God's arms in heaven. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
The hardest part of the tragedy in Texas is how many children lost their lives. Among them were 13-year-old Blair Harper and her 11-year-old sister, Brooke. Their bodies were found holding hands. Their parish priest in Dallas, Texas, says the family is being helped by their faith and prayers from the global community. Father Joshua Whitfield also reflects on what he will remember most about Blair and Brooke.
Brightness, fun. The girls were part of us. It's a huge parish, a huge school, and they were in the middle of it. Annie, their mom, is a teacher at our school, and you know, they served at Mass, and I mean, look at the smiles, you know. I mean, that's their legacy, reminding us not to take for granted the beauties that God gives us in each other. That you know, you really should love the people close to you and hug them tight and not take them for granted. And we're talking about that a lot. People here at St. Rita this week.
Father Josh had much more to say about the situation in Texas and how it's affecting his parish. To see the full interview, tune into EWTN News in Depth tonight at 8 p.m. You won't want to miss it. In the midst of the tragedy in Texas, there are stories of hope and humanity. One couple escaped the flood, and they thought they had lost everything. That couple Audrey and Nathan Rich join us now. Thanks for being with us. First, can you walk us through what happened in the early morning hours of July 4th?
So pretty much we just woke up like a normal day. We were going to have some barbecue, hang out with my wife's parents, and none of that happened. So woke up to an early morning text, and one of my buddies had texted me and said, you know, are y'all underwater? And I'm like, what do you mean? We're not underwater. And so I walked outside, looked at the river, and we're probably 100 yards from the river. And it was very rapidly getting closer to our house. So I started taking care of our animals. We have chickens and quail and ducks and cats and all that stuff. So I started getting them to higher ground. And while I was doing all that, another one of our friends called
me.
Audrey.
At 7:45, called me and he's like, wake up. And I'm like, why? It's 7 o'clock in the morning. It's like, look out the front door. And it's right on the porch already. And I'm like, oh, goodness. So I go to move my car and get back in the house. And I'm already in about mid-calf water. And I was packing a bag. And we barely got out without it being waist high. So
we're just
lucky to be alive. And
yeah.
When you return the next day,
we grab clothes.
What happened?
Really, we went back Friday evening, afternoon, and started to load up clothes and anything else that we thought was savable. So we grabbed most of our clothes, some valuable stuff that was washable, and that's about it. So we've been very grateful and thankful that everybody has come to help us tear out our house and rebuild it. And that's what stage we're in now. So waiting on, you know, what FEMA to say. And I own a diesel shop and operate it right behind the house, so waiting on insurance and that sort of thing. So we're kind of past the point of being upset about our stuff, you know, just grieving for all the other families that lost family members and kids and et cetera.
Trying to help our community as best as possible.
Sure. Amongst the destruction you found at your own site, what was your reaction? I understand you found your wedding photos. How did you react when you found those?
So those wedding photos were actually, here's two of them that we found. So they were actually in an end table in our living room, and that table had washed out of the front door and then probably 100 yards over under a carport, and that's where they all were. So we were all looking for that for like 20 minutes, and then somebody finally found it, and they were all in there. So it was pretty sight to see all of our wedding pictures, you know, ruined, but we still have them all. They're all on a flash drive and we can print more of them out. So
right. Stories of hope amongst the sorrow. Audrey and Nathan Rich, thank you for joining us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
As recovery efforts continue, we join in prayer for those grieving and for the souls lost. We remember a few of the identified victims so far.
Thank you.
Welcome back. President Trump is teasing a, quote, major statement on Russia, but that statement won't come until Monday, according to NBC News. Earlier today, the president told EWTN White House correspondent Owen Jensen something similar when asked about the latest Russian drone attack.
Russian drones hit a maternity hospital in Ukraine overnight.
I know. You'll be seeing things happen.
In the Middle East, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is back in Jerusalem without a Gaza peace deal. Mr. Netanyahu spent the last 4 days in Washington holding talks with President Trump, congressional leaders, and the families of hostages still held by Hamas. Meanwhile, the fighting rages on in the Gaza Strip. Health officials say more than 57,000 people have now died since hostilities began, including 15 people yesterday who died after an airstrike hit a medical center. Israel says they were targeting a militant, and they're investigating the incident. Meanwhile, in the West Bank, Christians have been attacked by Israeli settlers, and they say their community is no longer safe. It's happening in the city of Taibe. It's the last remaining town in the West Bank inhabited exclusively by Christians. In the time of Christ, it was called Ephraim, and it's where Jesus went after the resurrection of Lazarus, according to the Gospel of John. Residents say they are being targeted by settlers who are also attacking their farmlands and other property. The city has three churches, Latin, Greek, and Melkite. This week, their pastors issued an appeal to Israeli authorities to prevent further violence. One of those pastors joins us now, Father Bashar Fadwala, parish priest of the Church of Christ the Redeemer in Taipei. Father Bashar, thank you for joining us. Can you share the details of the attack that happened earlier this week?
Good evening from Taipei and good morning in the U.S. Thank you very much for your interview. I'm so happy that I'm now with you live on AWTN. The details of the settlers' attacks in Taipei, it's so huge because it began four weeks ago. Until now, we have a lot of attacks from the settlers who occupied the land of Taipei, who occupied our properties, the farms, and we cannot go to the east of Taipei because our olive trees land in the east of Taipei. So they attacked last Monday some land of behind the ancient church of the St. Joe Church, the historical and the very important holy sites for the people of Taipei. As you said in your speech that Jesus was here in Taipei after the resurrection of Lazarus. So when the settlers attacked the land of Taipei, they attacked also the people who's besides the church, the ancient church, and also they attacked by the cows, destroyed the olive trees, destroyed the agricultural life in Taipei, and destroyed the season of harvesting because 70% of the olive trees of the people of Taipei, it's in east of Taipei. And in that part of Taipei, occupied by the military occupation and built a settlement, two settlements in the east of Taipei, called Rimunim and Kaukab al-Sabah. And now we have the new settlements in the east of Taipei, begin by one settler, his name Manahi, and a few groups of him who attacks Taipei every day, every hour, in morning, in noon, in evening, in night. And we don't have any solution until now because we need more pressure to stop all of these fanatic and extremist settlers who attack the only and the last Christian town in the area.
Well, Father, I want to ask you, Cardinal Pierre Battista Pizzaballa, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, is supposed to visit Taipei on Monday. What do you hope comes from that visit?
It comes of that visit, that's hope. Give us hope. Give us encouragement. Because Cardinal Pizzaballa, the Patriarch of Jerusalem, and the other Patriarchs of Jerusalem, Theophilus III, and the Archbishop of the Armenian Orthodox Church, and the heads of the churches in Jerusalem, and 20 20 diplomatic or more than 50 diplomatic people who want to come to Taipei to encourage ourselves to have the solidarity and to pray for everyone here to have peace, to have justice, and they can give us also a more peaceful life, and we can also spread the love between ourselves as Christians and between the people. And the visit of Pizzaballa, the cardinal, and the other patriarch in Jerusalem, the Orthodox Patriarch and the Armenian Orthodox Patriarch, and the heads of the churches from Jerusalem, will pray in the very ancient church in Taipei, St. George, from the 5th century and 9th century. This is the first time in the history
Father, sorry to cut you off. We're running low on time here, Father, but I thank you for sharing. We'll be praying for that meeting, Father Bashar Fawadla. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The State Department has begun firing more than 1,300 employees as part of the Trump administration's efforts to shrink the federal workforce. Foreign service officers affected will be placed immediately on administrative leave for 120 days and then formally lose their jobs. The president and secretary of state say the move is necessary to make the department leaner, more nimble, and more efficient. In a major win for Christian groups, the Internal Revenue Service will now allow churches and other nonprofits to endorse political candidates without risk of their losing their tax-exempt status. That could lead to more politics from the pulpit. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest. Eric?
Yes, good evening, Mark. Yes, just to give you a little background about this, this change is the result of a lawsuit by several religious broadcasters against the IRS. They had challenged a 1954 tax provision known as the Johnson Amendment, arguing that it violated their First Amendment rights. Now, that tax rule prevented churches from participating in political campaigns or even endorsing candidates, but now the IRS has changed its position, a decision that President Trump is praising.
If somebody of faith wants to endorse, I think it's something that I'd like to hear. And I'd also, I can guarantee you the people that they're with every Saturday or Sunday or whenever it is they're with, they want to hear from these people.
President Trump had been trying to get rid of the IRS rule since 2017.
This is a resounding victory for free exercise of religion and free speech. Finally, the IRS is going to be off the backs of houses of worship. And the IRS is going to stop interfering in what pastors say to their flock about issues of moral and political concern.
The IRS now says that political discussions in a house of worship during services amounts to, quote, a family discussion and not an intervention in politics, and there should be no fear of losing their tax exemption status. However, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops says the IRS decision doesn't change how the Catholic Church should engage in public debate. They wrote, quote, the church seeks to help Catholics form their conscience in the gospel so they might discern which candidates and policies would advance the common good. The Catholic Church maintains its stance of not endorsing or opposing political candidates. Democrats I spoke with emphasize the party's commitment to the separation of church and state and say the IRS's decision concerns them. Even Republicans say priests and other Christian leaders should use caution.
The church's primary mission has got to be about spreading the love of God, the word of the word of Christ. And if there is a stand within that, that is consistent with that, consider it, but be extremely careful.
I would just say exercise some caution here. I think that answer could vary from one administration to the next, and I think it's going to probably end up in some type of a legal situation. I bet it'll get all the way to the Supreme Court.
Another thing that has lawmakers concerned on both sides of the aisle is that the IRS, that this change could actually lay the groundwork for political operatives to make major donations to churches with the hopes of their leaders endorsing one candidate over another. One thing's for sure, the IRS decision is leaving faith leaders and even legal experts divided. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly. Mark.
Pope Leo encourages nations to establish frameworks and regulations on AI so it can be used for the common good. Writing in a message for the AI for Good Summit, the Holy Father adds that responsible use of AI starts with those who develop it. He also warned that AI cannot replicate moral discernment or the ability to form genuine relationships. A new report says an Eastern Rite Catholic Church in India, in full communion with the Vatican, has avoided a possible schism. Pope Leo XIV appears to signal an end to a years-long controversy by removing a 2023 papal delegate to the Syro-Malabar Church. The disagreement within the church arose following a push for several liturgical reforms. They included whether the celebrant at Mass should face the people or the altar. The sides have since reached a compromise. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the Feast of Saint Benedict. Learn more about the patron saint of students and a highly respected figure among Catholics and Orthodox faithful. Finally tonight, the National Gallery of Art, right here in the nation's capital, includes breathtaking faith-based artwork. One piece features Saint Benedict, whose feast we celebrate today. Tara Merginer recently sat down with CUA Professor Jim Sullivan to learn more.
We'd like to welcome Dr. Jim Sullivan, Associate Professor at the Catholic University of America. Jim, thanks so much for joining us. First off, tell us a bit about who Saint Benedict was.
Well, thank you for having me. Saint Benedict lived between the years 480 to 547 AD, and since then, the Church honors him as a model of holiness and a worker of miracles. Saint Benedict is also revered as the founder and the father of Western monasticism. And as a young man, Benedict fled the corruption of Rome, and his holiness of life and his dedication to prayer began to attract many followers. He wrote a guide for monks and nuns known famously as the Rule of Saint Benedict that helped to spread monasticism and really led to the flowering of Christian faith. And most of what we know about Saint Benedict comes from the writings of Pope Gregory the Great. In the second book of his dialogues, Pope Gregory gives us a kind of biography of Saint Benedict. And this painting depicts one of the many miracles credited to this holy man.
What an incredible history. I want to talk about the art itself. It looks like the painting is divided in half with two scenes. What exactly is being depicted here?
Sure. You know, it appears that the painting is divided into two parts, but in fact, it's one single scene. If we begin on the left side, we see the haloed figure of Saint Benedict with his abbot's staff in hand and his famous rule on his lap. As Pope Gregory's story goes, a young boy named Placidus, who lived in the monastery, was sent to get water from a nearby stream, and the currents were too strong and he begins to drown. Saint Benedict, who sensed that the boy was in danger, calls another monk, Saint Maurice, to rescue the drowning boy. And this is what we see on the right side of the painting. Later on, when the boy recounted his experience, he said he felt the abbot Benedict's cloak overshadow him at the very moment he was being rescued from the waters.
So powerful. I want to ask you also, how prominent of a figure is Saint Benedict overall in religious artwork?
Sure. You know, very much a part of religious artwork, Saint Benedict, because of all the work that his monks and nuns had done to really witness to the gospel, to evangelize culture, and to spread the faith in the medieval Europe. So he was very much a part of what's depicted in art. But he's important for us today because prayer and work, ora et labora, this is the heart of the rule of Saint Benedict. And monks and nuns who followed the spiritual path of Saint Benedict really evangelized. They transformed medieval culture through prayer, through manual labor, learning, and a life of virtue. They rescued their culture with the light of faith in Jesus Christ, just as the child in this painting was rescued from the raging waters.
Incredible information and insight. Jim, thank you so much for joining us. We learned a lot.
Thank you so much.
Saint Benedict, pray for us. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Mark Irons. Good night, and God bless.